CGM 99.1 FM programming is hosted almost exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CGM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CGM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. This first segment is a post-dated interview, so some of the events referred to may already have happened. In this segment of our show, Rita Winkler will be telling us a little bit about ILAD. See, can you tell me a little bit about ILAD?
Okay, ILAD is a group called the Illinois League of Advocates for the Developmentally Disabled. And it is made up of all of the, a representative from each parent group, from the seven state centers in Illinois. And the state centers are large congregate care centers that are ran by the state of Illinois. So we each have presidents of our parents' groups or whatever. So that's who makes up the ILAD group.
So what are some of the supports you provide to those with developmental disabilities?
Okay, I think the biggest thing that we provide them is we provide them education. If someone comes to us and is needing services for their individuals, all of us have worked through the state system in Illinois, which can be quite, it's very frustrating, very difficult. We can help them, you know, help them who they need to contact, help them know their rights, make sure that those rights aren't being violated, and helping them find the absolute best services for their individual.
So what are some of the most common barriers in navigating the system?
To be real honest, the state of Illinois system is very cumbersome, and sometimes the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. You will talk to one. Everything is run first when you need services in Illinois through an independent service coordinator. And there's, I believe, six of those across the state of Illinois. So you would contact that person and say, I need services. So what will happen is sometimes when you talk to one of the people in that office, they have this answer. You talk to a different one, they have that answer. Sometimes they just don't answer you. Sometimes, honestly, they're not honest with you. So that is the biggest problem we have at this time, is just getting the same answer from everyone. So then frequently we will then have to go to the next step, which would be the director of DHS for the state of Illinois.
So how do you reach out to the affected communities to let them know that your supports do exist?
We do have a website. Is not very active. Each of the parent groups have a Facebook site, a website. My group, the Murray Parents Association, our website was just hacked last week, so ours is down. But that, through emails, we all have emails to our parent groups. Our Facebook site that I have for our center probably reaches 4,000, 5,000 people. So it is really through that. All of us also belong to other statewide groups, blogs, national groups. We belong to those. And pretty well, I mean, if they need to get in touch with someone, we're out there enough that they know that we exist.
So What are the most commonly used supports? What's most commonly asked for when someone comes to you?
What is usually asked for us are for individuals who have lived in Illinois in small group homes, which are called community integrated living facilities, CILAs, and individuals, particularly those with very high medical cares or very severe behavior issues, are living in those. They're not getting the services they need. And then we help find them either intermediate care facilities, which are facilities that would have doctors, nurses, psychologists, psychiatrists, so that those needs can be met. But that is our biggest group of people that come to us saying, you know what, the supports we're receiving right now are not working. We can also lead them then to something called SST in Illinois, which is a support team for individuals who have severe behavior issues, which is now our biggest growing area of individuals.
So I'd imagine for the families of those affected, there's a certain sense of relief or less strain when they find out they do have some backup, some support.
Yes, absolutely. And that is what I hear frequently. They say, well, we never knew there was anybody that could help us because we've reached out to this person, that person. No one has really helped us, and we're just so grateful you are here that you can help us through the system because, well, as most of us have been through the system and know how to navigate the system.
So, in your time doing this work, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
Yes, several, in fact. Our biggest success story is there's an individual, Marjorie, who lives at our large congregate care center now. She had lived in a small group home for about 6 years. She is one of maybe six people in the world with this rare genetic disease. She, at the time, the doctors and her mom would go every day. Her mom pretty much helped the facility figure out what to do with her medically. Well, anyway, at the time, the doctor finally said, you know what, there is no hope left for her. Her kidneys are shutting down, her liver, everything is shutting down. We need to get hospice for her. She was in severe pain. And this mom just said, you know, I don't want her to die in pain. All I want her to do is die peacefully. Well, the mom, you know, reached out to the state of Illinois. Nope, they said nothing they could do to help her. Reached out to the ISC office. They said, nope, nothing we can do. So she went to her congressperson, her state representative, and her state rep said, well, how about you, have you ever looked at Murray Center, which is a large, you know, congregate state center that has medical care? And she said, no, I never heard of it. So working with two congresspeople, they talked to the then governor of the state of Illinois, and she was admitted to Murray. She came in July, not even being able to eat. She hadn't eaten or taken anything by mouth for a long, well, probably months, over a year. And, you know, came to Murray basically on hospice to die. Well, within about 2 months, all of a sudden, they're doing swallow tests, they're doing whatever, they're getting her to start to eat. And Marjorie's mom called me one day and said, you know, I don't think she's dying. And what happened is she now can ride a bike. She is able to eat food again. She participates. She goes on outings, goes to church. She's very, very active. And it is probably our biggest success story because she just received the services she needed, the medical care, and she's doing fantastic.
Love that story. But the thing
it is, it's a wonderful story. We love it.
The thing is, if a person believes there's hope for them, if they feel that they're taking steps in the right direction, odds are the body will go where the mind tells it.
Yes, absolutely. And you are so absolutely right, and I hear that from families all the time. They will say, you know what, I finally feel there is some hope. There's some light at the end of the tunnel. This isn't going to continue to be, you know, just so horrible and unnavigable.
So if you could send any message to the community about the need for programs and services such as yours to provide people with what they actually need in life, what would you say?
I think for me, the biggest thing is that, and I know this is such a cliche, you know, one size does not fit all, but you really need to get to what is important to that individual. And until an individual's main basic needs are met, food, safety, shelter, they can't progress, and they need to really not give up. Keep contacting I get calls actually from people in Arizona, California, across the country, and saying, okay, can you help me get through the system? And I think they just have to follow their gut and know that as a guardian or a parent, they usually do know what is best for their child, and they really just can't give up.
Right. Thank you for taking time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec,
sure.
That'd be great. In this segment of our show, Cheryl Mullick will be telling us about PAVE. So, can you tell me a little bit about PAVE?
Absolutely. Well, PAVE was founded in 2010 in the Portland, Oregon area. And our mission is to help disabled veterans. Our emphasis is on mental health, on PTSD. And we train the dogs for approximately 2 years. And then we carefully match them to a veteran who has gone through a very intense application process. And then we place the dogs with them free of charge. And they have lifetime support and training for the life of the dog. And there's a lot of different things that these dogs can do to help mitigate some of the issues that these people have. Many of them have horrific nightmares, night terrors. They get very little sleep. And these dogs are trained to interrupt the nightmares and to ground the person. So if the dog is sleeping right next to the bed, they reach up and they nudge the person and wake them up. Or if they're in the bed with them, then they oftentimes just put pressure on the person's body. And so that's one thing that they do. They also are trained to the scent, a sense, plural, I should say, of adrenaline and cortisol. And we train them to do that. We have the veterans collect scent samples prior to coming to us, and we freeze them. And then we train the dogs. We have been training the dogs to the scent, so they know how to identify it. So it's kind of like a seizure dog that tells the person before the seizure happens. So it wouldn't do much good if the dog never did anything until the person was, you know, seizuring on the ground. So these dogs are able to smell the hormones switching and to alert the handler to this. And usually the handler is not even aware at the very beginning that they're having a problem, but the dog is taught to give them a nudge, like for example, if they're out in public, or if they're at home or someplace sitting, like at work, the dog will come up and do pressure therapy, basically on the person's lap. They sometimes come up with their own little recipe, and a lot of times they have a paw that they put on the person, and all the while giving them very heavy eye contact to let them know. So this enables the person to check in on themselves before things get out of control. So going out in public, for example, is very, very difficult for many with PTSD. They isolate. They just don't want to go out in public and face the crowds, especially grocery stores are very difficult. So we train them to be able to get out with the use of their dog. And it's just been an amazing transformation to watch all these years and all these clients that, of course, we follow up with for the life of the dog. So some of them that we're training have had their dog, 10 years, for example. It's kind of getting maybe close to the end of their working life.
So how do you reach out to the veteran population to let them know that the support does exist for them?
Well, we do presentations all the time, and we try to keep the mental health people in the VA system up to speed with what we're doing. Word of mouth, we have a website, and these people go looking. Oftentimes, though, their provider, and the provider, I mean their therapist or counselor, has, you know, brought it up to them that, have you thought about a service dog? Because many of them thankfully know what these dogs can do. And so, you know, it's kind of like that, word of mouth. But I think the people are so desperate for help that they have really been seeking out alternative ideas. And now that we've proven that the dogs are very beneficial, then it's not just some far-out crazy thing that somebody may think of. You know, the doctors are actually becoming aware and suggesting a dog for their clients.
So, in your time with PAVE, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
Oh my gosh. Oh, there's many, many, many. Yes, I mean, I've had people tell me that when I've done a follow-up with them and meet them someplace when we're practicing in the stores, they'll say, you know, this dog saved my life. If it wasn't for this dog, I wouldn't be here right now. That has a lot of impact. We have one dog that actually did interrupt an attempt by one person. But of course, we screen them so carefully, you know, hopefully they're far enough along in therapy that they're not quite at that point, but you never know what's going to happen with life. It's just, I mean, there's so many, I can't even tell you. Everybody comes back and says the same thing, that, that you know, the dog has been so life-changing that they can finally get out, integrate. Another thing I might add, too, is a third of our clients are women. And the women veterans are the forgotten piece in all of this. And most people are not even aware or even think of women veterans. And they really struggle. Sometimes it's different types of things. One recent success story, about 6 months ago, we had a woman come. And she was a single parent and to a young boy, 15. And all this boy wanted to do was be like a normal kid and go play sports and you know, be part of school activities, but he really wanted to be an athlete. But this mom could not bring herself to drive him, let alone attend any of these events. And after she got the dog, it was within a week, I'm getting pictures of her at a football game, you know, on the sidelines. The boy is doing wrestling. He's a Boy Scout now, and, you know, he's doing track, he's doing football, basketball. And so that's stories like that are just very heartwarming, and it is life-changing. So, yes, I would say there's many, many stories, but that's a good example of a recent one.
I find it remarkable that one of these dogs prevented a suicide attempt. And that being said, if you could send any message to the community about the importance of this work and the need for these dogs to continue their work, what would you say?
I would say to become involved, become aware, do some research on it. There's a lot of people suffering, you know, especially nowadays. I mean, we all know that COVID just really gave us all a strong hit, but these people especially, nobody knows they're there. So I would say to reach out and see what you could do to help. I mean, sometimes if you have an organization that does this kind of thing near your home, you could volunteer. There's always something you could do. It's not all just about money. It's, of course, donations are important for nonprofits, absolutely. But if you can't volunteer, I mean, definitely donating. But just become a part. I mean, reach out and contact people and just see what it is that you can do.
Mike, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Thanks.
Okay.
Handy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Hey, you. Yes, you. Thanks for listening to the station. CJM is a nonprofit organization dedicated to our community and you, the listener. We are able to operate because of the funds raised by our communities, but this is often not enough. We are asking for your support, which you could do by contacting our federal member of parliament. Call or write and ask them to support the development of a community broadcasting fund and extend the local journalism initiative. Learn more at ncra.ca/help. That's ncra.ca/help. Thank you once again for your support.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Rita Winkler told us a little bit about ILAD, and Cheryl Mullick told us a little bit about PAVE. In this segment of our show, Angela DeMeester will be telling us a little bit about her disability yoga program. So, can you tell me a little bit about your disabilities yoga work?
Sure. So, I started teaching children with disabilities pretty much right after I finished my yoga teacher training. My son was attending conductive education, and so I approached the conductor there, just said, you know, I'd love to share my teachings with the kids here, and they said yes. So there's a lovely school in Fort Credit, and I was teaching there regularly, so I'd go in every Tuesday morning, and we would do some yoga and mindfulness with the kids, and I was really, really surprised and so happy with the kids responded, the way the staff responded. I really didn't expect it. Maybe I just didn't know what to expect, but
So, in your techniques for kids with disabilities, did you use any modified or adapted methodology?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I did a second training where it was a 50-hour training on teaching yoga to children with special needs or different abilities. So there's definitely different ways that you can teach yoga and mindfulness to be inclusive and adaptive, whether it's using different props like blocks and chairs, straps, and also pictures and music, and just making, especially for kids, we make the classes just really fun and enjoyable so that they create a really nice connection with yoga and know that they can just be playful and use their imagination and have fun with it. And even as we get into adulthood, we use very similar practices in yoga. So using your mind and your imagination. The mind is so, so powerful, right?
So how do you go about reaching out to the disability population to let them know that your work exists?
How do I?
Yes.
So I've connected with just various people that I work with. My son has cerebral palsy, so I've, you know, been in contact with his physiotherapist, occupational therapist, as well as reaching out through the various rehabilitation centers that we've gone to for him. So in Peterborough, it's five counties. In Mississauga, it was Arnold Kids, Toronto, Hall of Doorview. So that's sort of been the main way I've found connections.
So what are some of the key benefits for a child with a disability takes up yoga?
The main ones can really help to reduce anxiety, help with their breathing, balance, mobility, posture. The benefits are endless, really. And also learning that, you know, their body is unique and that it doesn't have to look like anybody else's. So your yoga is yours, and your pose doesn't need to look like anybody else's. So I think there's a beautiful message there when we teach yoga.
So, your time doing this work, has there been any success moment that stands out for
you? Yeah, for sure. There's a number. So, one in particular, little girl was working with me, and in every class, we do a number of different breathing exercises. So we might pretend that we are a bunny in a garden smelling the flowers, and we take little breaths in until we can't breathe anymore. We do a big sigh out, or we do deep belly breathing, you know, imagining that we're blowing up a balloon, and we take a big breath in, or pretending that we are having a hot chocolate. So we take some big breaths in through our nose to smell, and then we might blow on it to cool it off. So through these various breathing exercises that we do in a very playful and fun way, after a few sessions, her mom told me that she was really struggling with breathing, and it was really hard for her. And, you know, when we first started the exercises, she kind of struggled with it. But after a few sessions, she was taking really big deep breaths, and her mom was quite amazed at how those simple little exercises really helped her daughter.
So, if you could send any message to the community about why this work matters and how every person with a disability should be able to find their rhythms, so to speak, what would you say?
I think the beautiful thing about yoga, whether you're in a studio or in a class, kids, that everyone is accepted as they are. And there's no need to change. There's no need to be like anyone else, because the practice is really beautifully, uniquely yours and yours alone. And I think that's one of the most beautiful things about yoga. And additionally, just the, you know, the mental health situation that we are in society, yoga and meditation help tremendously with mental health, depression, anxiety. They really help to settle the nervous system, and there's so many health benefits to this practice.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Angela's interview reminded me, in some ways, of our friend Nicole Daigneault, who also explains the benefits of disabilities yoga. But the fact is, where the mind goes, the body will follow. And in disability life, being at peace in your mind is one of the most important things. Keeping a level head isn't always easy. However, if you believe there's a way, chances are you'll be much more eager to find it. Like many things in disability life, practice like yoga can give you the tools to start off on a journey. The question then becomes, where are you going to take it? Are you going to practice with the breathing and the exercises? You don't know the full impact that a little relaxation can have. For someone who spends all their time dealing with muscle soreness, for example, this can be a huge relief. Even if it's just a moment out of the day, it's a world of difference. Past guest Carrie Wright once described the total freedom of doing something he enjoyed versus being in a chair. Fact is, he was just out there living. That's what we all should be doing, is finding those things we love, enjoying them, being a part of them, and not letting the stress or the worries overtake us. For the fact is, people are stronger than we think. Disability life, we must all just be aware that it is not a limitation or a constant source of pain. At least it doesn't need to be. It can, in fact, be a source of new ideas and new hope. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.